Good afternoon, everyone. The Education Finance Committee will come to order. We do have quite a bit of material to get through today, so we'll get right to it. Let's see, Representative Poston, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Madam Chair, I have reviewed them, and I find them to be in good shape. I'd like to move them.
All right, so Representative Poston moves approval of the March 6th minutes. Any discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Minutes are approved. Thank you very much, Representative Poston. All right, so we're going to hear some bills right off the bat today, and I think Representative Eklund is here. We'll have you come on up to the testifier table. And welcome to the Education Finance Committee. I will go ahead and move your bill, Representative Eklund, so we have it before the committee, and I would move that House File 2836 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. And with that, please go ahead and introduce yourself and provide us your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Representative Bob Eklund. I represent District 3A, pretty good share of northeastern Minnesota. First off, Madam Chair, it's my first time presenting in front of this committee, and I brought cookies, although I forgot them in my office. So when I'm done, I'll run back up to my office and get them and bring them back down.
That's just fine. We're here till 2:45.
So anyway, thank you, Madam Chair, members. The Net Lake School is an independent school district, northern part of St. Louis County and Couchiching County. The district serves students pre-kindergarten through grade 8, enrolling about 100 students in kindergarten through grade 8. Much of the property within the district's boundaries is exempt from property taxes, and the district's property tax base per pupil is exceedingly low. This means that unequalized levies impose substantial tax on the taxable property within the school district. Madam Chair, members, most of the 8th grade students, after they graduate from Net Lake, they move to the Northwood School in Cook, which is School District 2142, which is in the TAC and Aid Assistance area. So that's what this bill will do, is it will put the Net Lake School into the TAC and Aid Assistance area. I have a couple of people here that could have more, or that could provide more detailed testimony, Reed LeBeau and Mary Finnegan, the Assistant Commissioner of the DNR, IRRB.
All right. Would you like them to go ahead and offer testimony at this time?
I think they're, Madam Chair, I think they're just here for questions.
For questions. All right. All right. Very good. Thank you, Representative Eklund. All right. Sounds pretty concise. Any questions for Representative Eklund? All right. You've wowed them. So maybe it's the prospect of the cookies. I'm not sure which, but.
I'll have to warn you, Madam Chair, the cookies do have peanut butter in them, so if there's anybody with peanut allergies, be aware of that. So.
Good to know. Thank you. All right. Well, not seeing any questions in that, I would renew my motion that House File 2836 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Your bill is on its way to taxes. Thank you, Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members.
All right, Representative Erdahl. All right, welcome, Representative Erdahl. And I will go ahead and move your bill as well, so it's before us formally. The chair moves that House File 3093 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And with that, please introduce yourself and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dean Erdahl, representing District 18A. And for those of you who remember from last year, I had a bill to establish tax credits, $2,500 for teachers who get master's degrees in their content area, in other words, in what they teach. Through studies and through personal experience, I believe that it is something that can help teachers to become better teachers. And over the summer, it was brought to my attention that there was another area that we should consider in this legislation. And so all of this does is add one more category, special education, to this for those who are eligible to receive a tax credit for their master's in their areas. So that's all it is, same bill as last year with the inclusion of special education, and I do have a testifier on that bill.
All right, thank you, Representative Erdahl. Welcome to your testifier, and if you'd please just introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm John Klaber. I'm the Executive Director of the State Special Education Director Association. I'm here to speak in support of the changes to the tax code, which recognizes the challenges that our school districts are experiencing finding individuals who have the specific licensures necessary and required by law to work with students with the most involved disabilities. And so we're not talking, if you recall in the past, we were talking about an academic and behavioral strategist license, which is more of a generalist license. This recognizes that we are in need of individuals who are working with students who in many cases are working in self-contained classrooms, who are children who are in some cases in residential settings, who are working out of some of the independent districts throughout the state. We are in need of individuals who have specialized training to work with those youngsters. Additionally, you'll recognize on the list that we've identified early childhood special education. It is consistent with our desire in the state to try to intervene and support students as early as possible, and that involves working with students with disabilities at a young age. And so being able to provide support, being able to provide some resources, in this case a tax credit for those individuals willing to take on the additional coursework and the additional time and effort to do so, is something that we certainly endorse and would hope you would support as well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Klaber. We appreciate your testimony. Any questions or discussion on House File 3093? Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe for staff. For core content area, what does that cover already, and why wasn't special education covered by that already?
Who would like to field that one? Ms. Perra?
Madam Chair, Representative Wells, core content area, as it was defined in this language, are things like reading, language arts, history. So it was geared towards masters in those programs. Special education would be its own degree, its own separate area. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Debbie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a question for the testifier. I'm not quite sure. The statute existing allows the tax credit for masters where there is no pedagogy in the courses taken. How does that fit with special education master's degrees? Do you get a master's degree in special education without any pedagogy?
Representative Erdahl or Mr. Klaber?
Representative Dabney, I'm not having been a special education teacher. It is my assumption that pedagogy would be part of their degree in getting their undergraduate, or not undergraduate, but their bachelor's in special education. I wouldn't expect that pedagogy would be part of a master's degree program. It should have been previously taught to them.
Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know enough about how people end up as special education teachers, but I know a not uncommon model in the state is people get an undergraduate degree in something and then get their license through a master's program, or at least the beginning of a master's program. So I'm still not sure how that fits with special ed. Is there anybody in the room who knows
we have
the content of a master's program in special ed?
Mr. Klaber, yeah. Did you want to try and take a stab at that one?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative, my expectation is that this training would not be dissimilar from an individual who is teaching high school social studies and seeks to get an advanced degree in teaching high school social studies, or might specialize a little bit more maybe in U.S. history or world history as part of their master's. In this case, we have the individual who have the special education license. Most typically now, over the next few years, it'll be the ABS license, and they will add in the specialization area in autism or other disabilities.
Okay. I'm still confused, but ready to move on.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I might add, in case I didn't explain fully, this did pass into law in the last tax bill, so we're adding something to current law. Also, I meant to do this in the beginning, but I do have a minor oral amendment I would like to make.
All right, so why don't you communicate to me what your amendment is, and I will make it for you. I think it's just a date change.
On line 1.21 from 2017 to 2018.
Okay. So the chair moves that on line 1.21, the date June 30th, 2017, be changed to June 30th, 2018. All right.
Pardon me barging in, but we just want to make sure that the change won't retroactively affect those that are already in the program in other areas other than the special education area.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's a good point.
All right, you know what? I would withdraw my amendment.
We don't want to smoke everybody else.
Representative Erdahl, maybe you can confer on this, and you could do your amendment in tax committee.
All right.
Just so we don't want to cause harm here as part of this effort.
That's why we keep Mr. Strom around here.
That's right. That's right. And we're going to make sure he gets the cookies, so he's all right.
Right.
Other questions, comments? All right. These look homemade. Wow. Thank you. Thank you very much, Representative Eklund. All right. Not seeing any other questions, final comments, Representative Erdahl?
No, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. With that, I would renew my motion that House File 3093 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, you are on your way to taxes, Representative Erdahl. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Claver. All right, Representative Bennett, if you are ready. All right, and Representative Bennett, I know your bill was heard in Education Policy Committee this morning, and it's on its way to us, but we do not officially have possession yet. So, no, it's all right. We'll officially take up your bill next week. But I know you've got a number of testifiers here from who have traveled a distance to be here. So we wanted to give them the opportunity to talk about your bill. So this is an informational hearing, but you can certainly give us all the details and have your testifiers offer their comments. So
all
welcome.
Right. And thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for hearing this. And thank you for getting us in today. That helped our Fairmont visitors not have to travel twice like that. So just to mention this morning, I did offer an amendment to this bill. I'll just tell people maybe what that is. The amendment will keep the same goal, but it amends a different area of statute to make the funding work. So that was at the advice of MDE on that one. So that was the amendment that we had. And I'll just briefly state a few things about the bill, and then I'm going to turn it over to my testifiers, because this is really about them and what they're doing, and I think a bigger picture of what we could be doing as a state in the area of vocational education. So this bill will provide state aid for students taking vocational classes outside of the school day. Currently, those classes are only paid for if they're offered during the school day. So if a district offers a class in the evening, in the summers, on a Saturday, and for example, their welding class on Saturday mornings, it is not does not get any state aid, and they have to take it out of their general fund. And what we're looking for is to allow state aid to cover that. I had the opportunity, along with Representative Gunther, to go visit the welding class last Saturday in Fairmont. And boy, was I impressed. It was an amazing program. I especially loved that a quarter of the class were girls in welding, which I think is awesome. And actually, we're going to hear from one of them today. Not to say anything bad about guys, but I think we women can weld too, so that's pretty exciting. If I was closer, I told them I'd come over and take the class. I think it'd be very interesting. What I saw there, in addition to that, was there are many other opportunities in vocational education that they allow or have opportunity for, which the superintendent will speak to in a moment. But I just wanted to make two points. When I saw what this class is doing on a Saturday, I thought, well, first of all, it's allowing for more students to take part in career tech classes, and you'll hear more about that in a minute. And the other thing I thought was really exciting was it allows collaboration between school districts. Mm-hmm. There are a number of students coming over from Blue Earth, which is about 20 miles east of Fairmont, and they're able to actually take part in that class, and they would not be able to had it been offered during the school day. So I think there's a lot of opportunities here. So if you're okay, Madam Chair, I'm ready to have my testifiers kind of take over.
All right. Very good. Representative Bennett. Let's see. Is it Brown?
Yes.
Brown leading off. Welcome to all of you. And just if you would each give us your name before you begin your remarks.
Yes. Madam Chair, women, members of the committee, I am Joseph E. Brown, Sr., Superintendent at Fairmont Area Schools. I have with me Andy Trado, our vocational principal, Bob O'Neill, our welding teacher, Adam Carstensen, a 12th grade student, and Anna Nordquist, an 11th grade student. Minnesota needs more skilled workers, welders, carpenters, plumbers, machinists, and electricians. We have observed that many of our students do not have time during the regularly scheduled school day to take a vocational class. Therefore, Fairmont has implemented summer welding academy classes and Saturday welding classes, in addition to our summer ag classes. Currently, we do have 20 students taking a 15-week, 4-hour-per-day welding class on Saturdays. 11 students are from Blue Earth Area High School, 3 are from Grenada-Huntley East Chain, 2 students are from Fairmont, and we have 4 adults. Fairmont has 20 welding booths, and as Representative Bennett mentioned, 5 women and 15 men are taking this class. The House File 3190, as amended, is a nonpartisan bill. It will have a positive impact on the entire state of Minnesota, both rural and urban. Eventually, most people will need a skilled worker to build or remodel a home, whether one resides on the Iron Range or in the metro or in rural Minnesota. Minnesota is also blessed with a variety of manufacturing plants that are crying out for skilled workers, skilled welders, turret lathe operators, carpenters, plumbers, and electricians. I have attached copies of the class schedules of our two students that are here today to demonstrate that their class schedules are full, and the only time to take a vocational class is on Saturday or at nighttime or in the summer. I just want to highlight, too, when you meet Anna, I want to highlight Anna's schedule. Here's her 7-period day. Ready for this? Orchestra, concert orchestra, honors pre-calculus, honors English 11, advanced placement honors math statistics, college in the schools, honors chemistry, college in the schools, honors Spanish 3, advanced placement world history, college in the schools. One of our typical students, not really, but one of our top students. But in all honesty, she has no time in her class schedule to take a vocational class, so she has chosen to take a summer welding class and a Saturday welding class. Now, I do not believe that this will be a very expensive bill. I know that you'll have to run a fiscal note on this, but I don't believe it will be a very expensive bill, and here are the 3 reasons why. Number one, unfortunately, there are not that many high schools in Minnesota that have comprehensive vocational programs anymore. Many programs have simply been eliminated because of cost. Number two, very few teachers want to work on Saturday. Very few teachers want to work at nighttime, and very few teachers want to work in the summer. We're fortunate in our part of the state, we have teachers that are willing to do that. And thirdly, think about the number of students that are willing to come to class on Saturday. These 11 kids from Blue Earth, they leave at 7 o'clock in the morning to drive over to Fairmont, and they've never missed a class. They're there from 8 o'clock till 12 noon, and we're so proud of our kids in South Central Minnesota. I also think this, that as we look at the future of vocational teachers, there are very few of them out there anymore, and if we're going to recruit a teacher to teach vocational classes in our schools, we're going to have to start thinking about giving them a year-long contract, a 12-month contract, and pay them accordingly. Otherwise, they'll just stay in the private sector. I want to publicly thank my state representative, Peggy Bennett, for coming over to our school on Saturday. I want to personally thank Bob Guthrie, who represents the Fairmont area. And I'd be glad to yield to any questions after everybody else gets done. I want to introduce Andy Trado, our high school 7th and 8th grade principal and our vocational principal.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Welcome.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. As Mr. Brown said, my name is Andrew Trado. I'm the principal for vocational programs at Fairmont Junior Senior High School. Again, for the second time today, it's an honor to be here to speak on behalf of our schools, our students, our communities, and most importantly, the future of our great state. I'm a 15-year veteran of the education profession, and throughout that time, I've had the privilege of seeing a lot of great changes take place in our great profession. In 2014, Minnesota enacted legislation to ensure all schools develop a focus on the future of our state's workforce. The World's Best Workforce legislation was enacted, in part, to solidify Minnesota's presence as a competitive, viable workforce market for our future generations. According to the Minnesota Department of Education, for Minnesota to be competitive, we must have students who are career and college ready and students who are poised to lead the state's workforce. While we are striving to ensure all students are ready to be contributors to our society, it is no secret we are facing a shortage of skilled workers. By the year 2022, Minnesota is expected to have a skilled worker shortage of over 270,000 people. The seven-county metro area alone is predicted to see a shortage of over 60,000 workers in the next 2 years. According to the National Career Readiness Indicator, in conjunction with our state's ACT scores that all our juniors take, our students are across the state are demonstrating the abilities to leave their high school experience to be career ready. With the combination of our students demonstrating this ability to contribute and the gap in our skilled labor force, this legislation will only have a positive impact on our students and workforce. All areas of trades work are facing the challenge of recruiting skilled workers. And locally, we've had the benefit of collaborating with electricians, plumbers, and welders to analyze how we can serve each other to meet these demands. With the help of the newly adopted tiered licensure system, and this proposal for increased funding for career and technical education, opportunities outside the regular school day, we will be able to offer enriching experiences for our learners who otherwise would be unable to take such courses. I believe each and every student possesses talents and gifts that can be exposed and developed through these courses that two of our students that are sitting behind me have experienced. Our own students, who you will hear from them shortly, have seen the value of experiencing this learning outside of their regularly scheduled classes. Each has demonstrated skills that prove they are talented in many areas that go beyond their traditional schooling. With full schedules and course requirements, the classes offered in the summer months and on weekends have allowed for them to expand their skill sets beyond their regular classes. Additionally, students with varying academic abilities have been able to acquire skills they otherwise would not have been able to. Personally, I've been able to observe some of our students at the top of their class take these courses and expand their skills in areas that they're passionate about. The most moving examples I can share is that of a student with special needs that I was able to observe in the welding lab leading a group of first-time welders and how the appropriate technique of their basic welding. That was just an amazing experience to see a student be able to expose those skills that they again otherwise wouldn't have been able to. So by offering these courses beyond the school day, learners in our area of the state have garnered more voice and choice over what and when they're able to learn and develop a skill. Through your support, more and more students will have these opportunities to advance their preparation in career-related fields. With an accelerating need for skilled labor, we need to ensure students have the opportunity to accelerate and the acquisition of these skills that will help them be successful in their futures. As I also shared this morning, one of my favorite quotes is, "The greatest reason to grow is to have more to give to others." We hope to use this opportunity to be able to continue and grow our offerings beyond the school day so that the future of our state, which is our students, have more to give as they embark on their future endeavors. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Trado. Welcome.
Welcome. I'm going to ask one question. First of all, I saw the cookies were passed around. I'm wondering if I may also do a little show and tell. I brought some student work with me. And if that would be okay, I would like to get out of my briefcase and share it like I did this morning. While I'm doing that, I'm going to have Anna go ahead and speak first, and she's the better dogged pony of the pony show.
I would love whatever show and tell you what. If you've got student handiwork, I'd love to see it. All right, and Anna, please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. My name is Anna Nordquist, and I'm currently a junior at Fairmont High School. I'm taking the Saturday welding classes at the moment, and this is only the second welding class I've been taking. The first one I took was during the summer last year. So at Fairmont High School, I always knew there was vocational classes available, but I didn't start becoming interested in them until I took a woodworking class my ninth grade year, and that kind of opened all the doors for me. Also, my dad took lots of vocational classes when he was in high school, and he's been able to use them in everyday home repair, fix-ups, and add-ons. He didn't make it into a professional career, but he still uses it in everyday life. So even if the things I learn in this welding class I don't make into a career, I can still use all the time. Things that I have learned other than welding in this class have been just self-discipline and self-improvement. Being able to have a good work ethic and just self-motivation is really what future employers look for. And I think that is a very important thing to learn and to utilize during this time in my life. In high school, I don't think there's better skills to be learned than the ones I'm learning today. These trades, like welding and woodworking, will help me forever, even if I do or do not go into it later. I'll be able to help others, if it's the neighbor down the street or my parents or someone else. I'll be always able to use these skills in the future. There's also such a need for welders and plumbers, electricians, carpenters, and so many others' careers. They can benefit from these vocational classes at the early stages in high school, because when they go off to college or go into the workforce, they'll be able to use the things they have learned to better themselves. These trades are also so vital to the economy and to the workforce, not only in Minnesota, but in all the United States. These jobs are in high demand for us to have. It's expensive to run these things, especially if we're not getting the money for these Saturday courses and summer courses, because it's coming out of the own budget rather than being paid for. All these different careers, these vocational jobs, they go where industrial machines can't. Industrial machines can build things. They can put things together. They can weld a bead or two to make something. But in the pipeline in the city and in the middle of the field, a farmer working on his tractor, he can't get that from an industry. He has to do that on his own. So to learn these things can only benefit us and our economy.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Nordquist. So, Anna, thank you very much. It's great to hear from you, and you're right. You will be always a popular person if you know how to fix things, because a lot of people don't know how to do that. So, Representative Jergens.
Ms. Nordquist, I'm just curious, what is your favorite type of welding?
Ms. Nordquist.
Since this is only my second class, I haven't gotten too much experience in there, but what I have done, I like stick welding a lot, the traditional welding. it's kind of challenging, but I like how I like that challenge. I'm not very good at it yet, but I like to improve.
Representative Jurgens.
Well, you'll keep working at it. You will get better at it. Now, the other question I have, has your dad let you take on any projects at home yet?
Ms. Norquist.
He has stuff for me, he says. But he says I have to get good enough at aluminum welding first to do them, which is true.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Madam Chair and committee, this was Anna's weld, the triangle one that we sent around. So this is her MIG weld, which traditionally is called, we call it MIG, but it's gas metal arc welding, pretty standard in all the manufacturing. So Anna does do primarily MIG because that's what we teach there. So I actually sent her weld around. For those of you who got to see the triangle one, and the ones that I shared with show and tell, these are all intro kids welds. And ideally, we just visited Alexandria Vocational School last week, and they do the same things yet at the vocational school. You want to be able to cut the weld in half and see three or fewer defects for that student to have successfully passed that. We make multiple passes. It should look like one solid piece of metal. So Anna's a really good welder. We saw zero defects in her, so I just wanted to point that out. I will tell you that her parents have also sent stuff to school during her summer academy, and she did do stuff for her folks at school. So,
Representative Nornis, you had a question.
Yeah, just a quick one, Madam Chair. This welding program you've got, is this for just a 1 year, or can you take more than 1 year?
I can take it as many times as I'd like, as long as even after high school, I guess. I'd have to pay for it after high school, but in high school I can take the summer as many times, I can take the Saturdays as many times as I'd like.
So, Madam Chair, I guess what I'm saying is it can be pretty advanced, you'd be a pretty advanced welder by the time you're done.
Yeah. During the school day, they do offer a college course for welding. I haven't been able to take it since my schedule, but... I can only hope to improve.
Thank you. Representative Nornis, are you?
Yep, that's I'm done.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Anna, did you apply for the high school page program this year?
Ms. Norquist, I'm not sure how she's going to fit all this in, but we'd love to have you.
We actually don't have one, so.
We do. Only juniors can apply, and we think that you would be able to achieve, but the deadline's gone.
We would let her apply if it was a Saturday program.
She'd be back home in time for the Saturday
program. We have a Sunday program.
That's true. And what grade are you in, Ms. Norquist?
I'm in 11th grade.
11th grade, okay. Yeah, well, you know, maybe a page or an intern later on if you have interest. And you can teach us a few things, I'm sure, about welding and other skills. So, all right, well, thank you. And I know we have another student who is here to testify.
If you mind, I can jump in while he comes
sure.
up. So, my name, Madam Chair and Committee, my name is Robert Bonin. I am the career tech educational teacher in Fairmont High School. Fancy title for the old verbiage of vocational teacher, industrial arts. A little bit different with today's world. I've specialized in the automotive transportation career area, which includes welding in there. So I am the welding instructor at Fairmont. So just a little history of our program. Our current high school was built in about 19. It opened in about 1972. We had a full vocational program at that point. Very comprehensive with, I think at one point we had like 17 different programs that were occurring underneath the vocational center. We did have a strong welding program back then that was, if you know welding, it was strictly arc welding, stick welding, shielded metal arc welding, whatever you want to call it. I was fortunate enough to have been a student there myself at that very high school and benefited from that strong vocational background. We had a metals program in addition to that with a foundry and a forge, and we had a couple of lathes, and we had some end mills. And so students that were wanting to go into precision machining and tooling or welding got a great rebound, or should I say jump start, into the career force by just attending high school at Fairmont, because we did have that vocational program. Unfortunately, that money started drying up at the federal level through the Carl Perkins legislations, and we started to see more of those vocational centers fade away. Fairmont was one of them. We were fortunate enough to hold on to five of our key programs through that budget cuts in the late 80s, early 90s, where we were starting to see that push in four-year educational programs. We wanted everybody to go to college for 4 years. We were one of the five programs that survived in Fairmont. We have a strong business program yet. We have a strong family and consumer science. We have a strong welding, strong automotive, and an agriculture program. The need for welding, as it is right now, about 2013, we started to see a resurgence of students coming down into the vocational area wanting to weld. And so what we discovered at that point was we still had those same 16 welding booths that we had back in 1972, and those were stick welding units. And, of course, as we've said today, manufacturing requires the skill of MIG, which really sped things up in our manufacturing firm. Took a lot of time to stick weld, so now we have this automation process through the welding called MIG. So we had three MIG welders in-house, and we were starting to see more students, and students coming down being successful. We had gone to regional welding competitions and did well. It required me to get more welders in my program at that point, and, of course, budgets are the way they are with education. I went back to the superintendent and said, hey, I need about 10 more welders, and he said, great. What are we going to do to get them? And so we went to the community, and down there in our pocket of the world, we have Waytronix and Agco and GKN down over the border, and Artsway, which are all agricultural manufacturing. We were able to secure some funding. It actually wasn't me. When I say we, I mean Joe and our school board and all of that stuff. We were able to put together a pretty comprehensive welding program at that point. And so the need was there. The students started to come back. So why are we here today? Because there's a greater need yet. You guys talk about skills gaps. We fill the skills gaps. On a monthly basis, I'm getting contacted by our local manufacturer saying, how many welders do you have for me? You know, unfortunately, they have to be 18 and preferably graduated to go to work. And so we can't fill it completely from in-house. And so this is where that Saturday school starts to come in. We opened it up. We got kids from Blue Earth. We got kids from Grenada. We've had interest from some private schools there, and we're filling those classes up. I have 20 welders in-house to date that we can have 20 students. So in addition to the two intro to welding classes that I teach, the career advancement class, which is a CIS through Riverland College, you know, those three classes are full. We have the 20 kids that are in those. We're running another 20 students on Saturday. We had just about 20 over the summer. And so the need is there. The students are there. We're, like Joe had mentioned, we have adults taking it. Those adults are finding jobs after they take the class. We work with local manufacturing. They actually come into our building. They're seeing the students weld. They're seeing the curriculum that we have. They're helping us tweak our curriculum all the time. They're visiting with our administrators. They're actually in the classroom with the students. We've had their human resource departments come out and actually talk to our kids about interviewing skills and how to attain these jobs. So the need is there. We're just trying to find the money to continue to feed that program. How do we get more students into our program? And so that's why we're here today, to kind of ask you to help us out. The benefit for you, the benefit for us, is skilled workforce. We're able to take those students that might have a desire to go into the welding, train them, and turn them out as, you know, productive labor, you know, for ourselves here in the great state of Minnesota. There's just one slight problem, and that's the jam in the schedule. Kids like Anna, who can't take the class because her schedule's so full. The student that's really a hands-on learner, who struggles with the passing a history class or struggles with passing an English class and now has to take it back-to-back and can't get down to my area to take the class because he's been jammed up and has to take two Englishes. And so that's where the Saturday comes into play. So I thank you for your time this morning. Entertain any questions that the committee or yourself would have, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bonin. And I think we have another student who wants to tell us about his experience. So please give us your name, and we welcome your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Adam Carstensen. I am a senior at Fairmont Junior Senior High School, and I'm enrolled in the Saturday welding class and many during the week. First off, some background on myself. I have been exposed to the trades ever since a young age. My dad is a carpenter, and I remember growing up and wanting to be like him. And when I got to high school, I finally had the chance to do so thanks to the vocational programs. I had taken four welding semesters before my first Saturday welding class, and I remember looking back and seeing how much work I've gotten done in the 4 hours allowed on Saturday. Thanks to this class, I knew for sure that I wanted the trades to be a part of my life, so I chose to go to school for welding technology in Alexandria, Minnesota. The weekend shop classes are incredibly important to many students because they simply do not have enough time in a normal school day to take vocational classes. I enjoy these weekend classes because they offer more time at once to get a task done, with this extra time to get bigger tasks done when there would not be enough time to do during the normal school day. These classes would help me with everything from improving certain welding positions to making custom projects for someone in the community. These classes teach us a lot apart from the subject we are studying that we will use for the rest of my life, such as problem solving and people skills. These skills can be developed in other core classes but cannot be used the way they are in a shop environment where you're using them everywhere and all the time. In my eyes, I would say I am the most experienced in my school for welding. I have taken 9 classes in welding, and if you do the math, that is over 700 hours in the shop just for welding. With this in mind, I can honestly say that I am still learning skills and techniques daily that I will use later in my life. These shop classes are a big part of the future of our country because these are our builders and innovators of the future. The trades, such as plumbing, electrical, carpentry, construction, etc., can be represented like a chair. You need all 4 legs for the chair to work properly. If you are missing a leg, in this case welding, the chair will fall. You don't have to be a genius to see that would be bad for a way of life. In the end, welding is a huge part of this chair. Without it, there will be bigger problems in our future. So because of this, I believe that we need to encourage and help move the trades forward.
Thank you very much, Mr. Is it Carstensen? Did I get that correct? Thank you so much. Representative Crescia, you had raised your hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the instructor, as I was listening through and you were talking about the kids finding time to come to class, one of the things that I'm wondering about is part of the reason that the kids that you're seeing are the kids that show a little bit more motivation or a bit more ambitious? And if that's the case, how do we get to some of those fringe kids that we seem to walk by all the time or that are looking for someone to invite them into an opportunity? I'm sure you've already worked on that, and I'm just looking for ideas that are out in the field.
Mr. Bonin.
Thank you. The fringe kids are the kids that we see in our vocational areas. They're the ones that are looking beyond how do I get a job outside of the high school? I don't want to go to college. I don't even want to go to tech school, so what am I doing? And so they are down there exploring. As I had mentioned, unfortunately, that fringe student is usually the one probably flunked his 9th grade English and maybe the 9th grade science. So now he's in a 10th grade classroom taking a 9th grade science and a 10th grade science at the exact same time, so he's eliminated an elective. That elective is our vocational classes. So what we have to do with those same kids is try to hook them in that after school, that Saturday class, the summer academy, and we are seeing those kids take the class. It's interesting because they're the same kids that will tell you, we come to school for our vocational classes. We just at lunch had that conversation with the 2 students behind us. They can't even fathom what a school would be like if they didn't have those elective classes. And so, I don't want to put words in the mouth, but Adam had just said himself, he wouldn't want to go to a school that didn't have those electives. So when you think about that student that is on the fringe that's been jammed up from classes or something, what are we doing with them? And I don't have the answer of how we can, you can't say take away a math elective requirement. You can't take away a science requirement. So we do have to reach them. And so right now, for us, I think Saturday and in the, you know, the summer, so that we can get to them. But I'm going to have Joe speak too. So,
Mr. Brown.
Madam Chairman, Representative, one of the two things that we have found is we have increased our vocational classes and reinstated our ag classes, our construction trades, welding, automotive. As we expanded those, two things have happened. Our graduation rates have increased, and the number of kids going to the Area Learning Center in the neighboring county have significantly dropped off. In other words, we're keeping more of our students in school. And, you know, I don't know about your Area Learning Centers, but the Area Learning Center that we send, the few kids that we send to, they have a graduation rate of 20%. Our graduation rate is in the mid-90s. And we feel like the more we can keep students in a comprehensive school district with strong fine arts, with college and the schools programs and vocational programs, to really encourage the type of schools that we have in Minnesota that we used to have. There were comprehensive schools that offered quality programs for all types of kids. And, you know, in the vocational area, you know, and my father was a mechanic after World War II. He served 34 years at DuPont Cellophane Company. You know, so I grew up with a father who was in the trades. I have a lot of respect for my father. And but those are skilled jobs. I mean, they're as skilled as we have a Mayo hospital in Fairmont. And, you know, it takes a skilled worker to be an electrician and a plumber and a welder. And we've got to get serious about this. And we care so deeply. I mean, all of us care so deeply about Minnesota. It's such a great state. But as Principal Tradel pointed out, the thousands of workers that we need. I'm going to be 67 years old next month. There's a lot of folks that are in my age group that are retiring, and we have very few people to go and replace them. That's why this is so important to get passed. And you folks, I understand the legislative process very well, and you folks figure out the best way to fund it. And we're pretty flexible. Whether you consider a pilot project and consider limiting it, I don't believe this is the type of bill that's going to cost a gazillion dollars initially, because there are so few schools that have these programs left. But if we don't do something different this session, it's going to cost the state a lot more money in the long run. It's going to cost you and me a lot more money. I mean, I don't know the last time you tried to get a plumber or an electrician to come to your house, but you're on a waiting list. I mean, it's ridiculous. I'll stop for now.
Representative Christian.
Thank you. And I want to do a follow-up. I also have an education background and work in the industrial tech area as well as English. And the reason I bring this up, I want to be careful because I don't want to misconstrue the word fringe.
Right.
When I use that term, what I'm really talking about is when we walk through the hallway, we're walking by kids that there could be an art student, there could be a theater student, and those kids, or there could be an engineering student, introducing those kids into the vocational arts because, and it was always this cross-pollination because, like, for example, when I was doing a theater production, I needed somebody who could do woodworking.
Right.
I needed, you know, you have to construct the set and you have to, so how do we cross-pollinate and actually break down these barriers so that, like I said, kids are comfortable moving in and out of all of these areas.
I'm going to yield my seat to Mr. Tradel.
Mr. Tradel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things, you know, that in terms of, you know, I gave a couple examples of students that have been able to do that. One of the first examples that I shared of a student who was in the top 10% of their class that had a full schedule, they were able to take such a course. And actually, their passion project was an old pickup that their grandparent had donated to them. But it's a student in that exact realm. They were an athlete. They were, you know, in our honors courses. And this was a way for them to continue to expand their thinking. One of the things in a school our size, grades 7 through 8, we have approximately 850 students, is our students, the fact that we have the vast array of vocational courses that we offer, as well as the number of college in the school courses for our students on that college track, is the dots are connected quite a bit. We have a recent graduate who is in band, choir, orchestra, three-sport athlete, and was also able to take a vocational class to expand those skills. So I think our school district does a good job of exposing those kids. Mr. Bonin, as well as our students that are in there, have built a culture in our vocational wing of our building where kids are open to trying trying new things. A couple years ago when our welding program started to gain momentum again, there was an article in our local newspaper that highlighted five females, again, of our own students. You know, currently of the five females in the course, they're not all Fairmont students, but at that time they were all kids in our classes from varying backgrounds that were able to take that. So I would concur that it is extremely important that we allow those students that, as we mentioned, can take these courses as enrichment opportunities and not, you know, as you mentioned, the students that are on, you know, those fringe students that we don't always look at it as the ones that are academically challenged, but also the ones that are academically excelling, and how do we even that playing field for all of them to develop these skills. Did I answer your inquiry?
Representative Krishna.
Actually, way better than I expected.
So all right.
That's handy.
Thank you. Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Brown, is your spouse our former colleague, Ms. Representative Robin Brown?
Mr. Brown.
I'll answer that if it either helps the bill.
It helps for me.
Madam Chairwoman, yes, Robin is my spouse, and I will want to point out, Robin took the Saturday welding class last summer. Now, we charge students $250. It cost me $1,440 because after the welding class, Robin wanted her own welder. Robin wanted her own plasma cutter, and we had to get the special electricity sent out to the barn. I just want to point that out for the record.
I will add, when Superintendent Brown says that we charge students $250, our own resident students do not currently, you know, pay that. Our neighboring districts, one of the neat things is, so our students that are coming in from neighboring districts, they can take the class in our building, and they're also granted high school credit towards their graduation, even though they're from another district. Our neighboring districts have been really good in that collaborative nature to allow their kids to do that. Our adults that finish the class do get a certificate. Many of them have been hired, as Mr. Bonin alluded to, out of our welding academy. So even though they may not have an associate's degree or a two-year degree in a trades-related field, they are able to use that certificate as leverage with our local employers to say, I do have the basic training, and then they go into those professions, and then they train them specifically for that workforce.
And I just want to close up on a couple of things, if I may, Madam Chairman. I want to tell you about three things quickly. One, Mr. Trado and I, in August, we went and visited two of our major employers in town. We visited Day Plumbing, which is a large heating, air conditioning, plumbing department, and we visited Dewar Electric. And the reason we visited them is that both of them now can, under the new certification, they can get Tier 1 licenses because they have workers that have more than 5 years in the skilled. And the Dewar Electric is actually going to be working with us and teaching an electricity class this summer with their people. We'll be sending our students to their factory. And I just want to thank the legislature. I know that was controversial last year, but the Tier 1 license for CTE is perfect. I also want to thank the legislature. I see Representative Marco over here, World's Best Workforce. You know, we've taken advantage of the World's Best Workforce under the ESSA law now. Every Student Succeeds Act. We do expect everybody in our district to succeed. End of discussion. And I think with the collaborative spirit that we have, not only in the legislature right now, but in the needs that we have in our great state of Minnesota, this is the time to do stuff like this, to tie together the work that you folks have done, the legislative laws that you've passed in the most recent years. And I want to add one more thing. The long-term facility maintenance program that you folks put together that allows all schools to maintain their facilities. You know, we need those. We're redoing some of our roofs right now. We're doing an LED project where we're replacing all 5,000 of our fluorescent light bulbs with LED lighting. Using Dewar Electric, they've just hired two of our students at nighttime to help install these 5,000 LED lights at night. That wonderful collaborative spirit between the public sector and the private sector. You know, as you all used to say, we all do better when we all do better. And Madam Chairwoman, I want to thank you for your committee, and I really want to thank my state representative, Representative Bennett, for drafting this bill, and Mr. Strom, I want to thank you for fixing it,
and I know some of you are going to decide on how to fund it, and that's your job to do, but it's the right time to do it. It's just the right time, and I think we're going to look back at this little piece of legislation, which is only a paragraph long, and I think we'll come back in 2 or 3 years, and we'll say, wow, that thank goodness we did that, just like we did the Tier 1 licensing, just like we did the world's best workforce.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Representative Slocum, did you have a follow-up?
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say that when Mr. Brown talked about certification for kids, what that does for kids to get into post-secondary schools is marvelous. Mm-hmm. It gives them a cohort to go with, and they're way more likely to go to a post-secondary with the people that are also certificated and get a post-secondary kind of education, which is what we want, because it gives them a better wage and everything else. This program, I love this, which is why I signed on. Love it.
Very good. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quickly, I don't know if any of you students or teachers or the folks from Fairmont have a chance to make it up to the fourth floor, probably the southwest corner. Representative Swedzinski does a lot of welding, and he does a lot of artwork with his welding and does a really fine job. And I know on the weekends, in the summer, in the interim, he goes around and goes to shows and sells what he does, and it's really beautiful stuff. But I had a real quick question for the vice principal or whoever can answer this. I know a lot of the vocational things, you know, left schools years ago, and it's supposedly because of cost. But what does it cost to run your welding program?
You know, on the second page of my handout, I just estimated working with my business manager yesterday before I came up here, the Saturday welding class that we're running right now, it costs us $4,000 for the teacher, $2,000 for the instructional aid, and then probably about $1,500 for the supplies, the gas, and the wire feed. And so that's about $7,500. And the way this bill was drafted, with the $5,117 base times 1.2 weighting for the 7th through 12th grade students, you take that times the 0.20 for the extended time, that would generate a total of $1,228 would be the maximum a student could do. And that's only if he or she has taken 204 hours of an extended outside of the school day instructional class. I divided that by 204 hours at $6.02 per hour. That would generate, to get a semester class, one credit semester class at our high school, you have to complete at least 60 hours of instruction. So I figured if 20 students were in this Saturday welding class, this bill would generate $7,223. It would cost us probably about $7,500. The point of that story is that this is not going to make us any money, but we can make it work. And more importantly, though, we're going to end up with 20 skilled workers. Now, show me another program in the state where for $7,500 you can get 20 skilled workers. I mean, I'd be glad to find out where that is. So that's kind of the cost analysis.
Representative Scott.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Does that include the metal and all the materials? And is that in here somewhere?
Mr. Brown.
The beauty of the program, Madam Chair, the beauty of this program is that because of the collaboration that Mr. Modine has with many of our companies that manufacture, they donate a lot of metals to us. Great. And so the gas we have to purchase, of course, electricity is part of the program. You want to add anything?
Yeah. So when you look at the when you look at the cost of that stuff, the donated metal saves considerable cost. I mean, if you start looking at other programs, how would they make that work? And so I could even give you a dollar amount. They will say roughly, you know, when we would like to, you know, extend to them, you know, tax donation. Mm-hmm. There's probably right around $2,000 for the donated metal. Now, every school is going to do it a little bit different. But the welding supplies are kind of figured into what he has for a cost. Okay. Now, that's for one class.
Okay.
In our school, obviously, we teach, you know, there's five other classes, or five total classes. So, I mean, the cost is, you know, and then the other part of that, too, is you're only going to get so many years out of the machine.
Right.
And, you know, so some schools that don't have a welding program right now, what would that initial cost be? And actually, Joe helped me do that, because we, over the last 3 years, have purchased essentially
17 new welders.
If I could add one more thing. After my first year at Fairmont, I had to cut $1.5 million in 40 jobs. We didn't cut any teaching positions, but if anybody retired, we didn't replace them. And we had to cut 40 people. We had to cut administrators, secretaries, cooks, custodians, paraprofessionals. And the second year I was at Fairmont, this is my eighth year at Fairmont, Bob came to me and said, we have 86 kids signed up for welding. Bob asked for $10,000 for additional supplies. And so I went to my school board and asked for an additional $10,000, and they said, no, you just cut $1.5 million. They said, go out and raise the money. So I sent out 10 letters to 10 different companies. I sent a letter to McNeilius in Dodge Center. I sent a letter to Artsway and Agco and all the 10 different companies and asked them if they would be willing to, ready for this, adopt a welding booth. And for $1,000, if they agreed to adopt a welding booth, we could buy a new welder, we could set up the equipment that we needed, and in trade of that, we would put up a sign representing their company, their corporate name, their address, their website address or telephone number, and then we give these 10 companies first access to our students. We let them come in with their HR department and talk to them about their company. They give tours of their companies, and many of our students go directly from our high school directly into the workforce.
Great. Thank you. Representative Mariani, and I'm going to allow you to be the last questioner on this topic because we then need to move on to the rest of our agenda, and this has been a really great discussion. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had the privilege of hearing this bill early this morning in Chair Erickson's committee, and so, Representative, you know the question I'm going to direct your way. And I do want to repeat again my appreciation for the work, Superintendent, that you're doing and your team, and my strong admiration for these young people for the quality of experience that they've committed to in enhancing their skills, both the technical side but also all the surrounding skills go along with learning the technical work. So this morning, Madam Chair, Mr. Strom went through quickly for us, just reminding us of the purposes behind the extended time program. And so clearly, you know, it's a program that's focused on remediation work. We're not talking about remediation work. We're talking here in terms of enrichment work. And again, I'm sensing that this committee is also feeling, you know, the goodness of this work, just as the earlier committee did. But it does raise some interesting questions for us, right, Madam Chair, in terms of do we want to use this particular funding stream to provide this terrific opportunity? And if we do, let's do it with eyes wide open because of the purpose that's been established for the extended time work. And so my question to you, Representative Bennett, is whether you had thought of other possible places for us to be able, within the formulas, to be able to support this work, and how open are you to exploring other ways in which we can support this kind of work through our appropriation schemes?
Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair, thank you, and Representative Mariani, as I said this morning, very good question. I'm very open to working on creative ways to get this funded, whether it's a pilot project to start with or working through extended time. You know, you've all used very creative means to fund your program. I think we can get creative here, too, and figure this out. I would say, though, that when you look at extended time and remedial work, sometimes it's not so black and white on what's remedial and what's not. When we heard things about their graduation rate and how less and less students have to even go get that remedial or those, what's that course? Yeah, the Area Learning Center and so on. I think we're tapping into students here that we're circumventing them before they need that, which to me, that's what remedial should be. So I know that's technically not what it is, but that's why I don't see a huge problem with using extended time for that, because I do believe that we're getting to the same goal and keeping more kids in school, getting them graduated. And anyway, that's
thank you, Representative Mariani.
Well, Madam Chair, that's fair enough. And I, again, this is not a hostile question, not at all. I just want to make sure that we're real clear about what we're doing relative to the state of purposes for this particular funding scheme, and perhaps you might have even just now identified ways in which to perhaps further prescribe reaching into this type of supporting this type of work within this area. It's not unusual for us, I think, to journey into traditional funding sources, but perhaps with more prescriptive language than what might be here. I'm just thinking out loud here, and again, this is not a hostile question whatsoever. I look forward to seeing what we can creatively do to support this kind of work, whether it's with extended time or some other source or some further prescription of the language that's here.
Yeah, and thank you, Representative Mariani. And obviously, we are going to come back to this topic when we formally have the bill, so probably next week or sometime shortly thereafter. So we'll have a little time to think about this and work with Representative Bennett. And I think, from observing the committee members, people are pretty impressed with what's going on in Fairmont and with this program. So hopefully we can put our heads together and find a way to make this possible. So, Representative Erickson, did you have a quick comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Strom, do you have any idea how much this would cost? Ms. Adrians, thank you.
Ms. Adrians.
Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, there's a fiscal note in process right now, and it's not fully complete, so we'd like to let them kind of mull it over, and then once it's complete and once the bill is formally introduced, we can pass that up.
Thank you. Very good. All right, with that, I want to thank so much, first of all, our students and your terrific testimony and the great things that you've learned in your welding programs. Very impressive. Thank you, Mr. Brown, Mr. Trudeau, and Mr. Bonin for all of your work with our kids, and thanks for coming today to testify. Thank you, Representative Bennett. Any final comment?
Well, I just want to thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, and I'm looking forward to working together to figuring out, how to make this work. I'm excited about it. I'm excited. The ingenuity and creativity they're using to educate kids is amazing, and that's what's the fun part about this committee. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks to all of you. Safe travels when you go home. All right, so now we're going to turn to an update on the Purpich Center. And so if Dr. Trigstad wants to come down, and if you've got others with you, that's fine too. All right, well, welcome, gentlemen, and full disclosure, Dr. Trigstad used to be the superintendent of Eden Prairie Schools, so we go back a little ways, but he's now in a new position as executive director for Purpich Center for the Arts, and it's great to have you here, and we just wanted to have you come and touch base with how things are going, and I'm loosely calling it kind of a turnaround or a rejuvenation of Purpich per the legislative auditor's report and things that have happened since. So thanks for coming, and we look forward to hearing from you today.
Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you to the committee. I would also add that I was the superintendent of Representative Cretius' students in Little Falls before I came to Eden Prairie. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present information regarding the ongoing organizational work being undertaken at the Purpich Center. I've been the executive director at the center for just over 6 months after having served in Minnesota Public Schools as a superintendent and principal for over 20 years. And the first 16 years of my professional career was as a band director in Minnesota and Wisconsin. I'm very pleased and proud to have been able to have the opportunity to merge these two facets of my professional career and work at the Purpich Center. Been asked to provide an update on the areas of concern that were noted in the OLA reports last year. I can tell you that a great deal has been accomplished, and I believe that the Purpich Center, as an educational organization and state agency, is in a far better place today than it was 1 year ago. To share that story, I need to go back about a year. And at that time, the board of directors of the Purpich Center chose to take an active role in addressing the concerns that were raised in the reports. They hired an interim director and made significant changes to leadership and governance processes of the agency. The board initiated an executive director search, and when I joined the organization in late August of 2017, many of the items that were discussed in the OLA reports had been addressed by the board and administration. One of the first official interactions I had with the board was a two-day process to develop a strategic plan, and that took place in August. And we left that meeting with five strategic goals. They were statewide arts education leadership, operational excellence, financial stability, positive public image, and robust enrollment. And at that time, the board also created a task force entitled The Future of PERPICH to research and recommend longer-term vision for the arts high school. At this time, I'm going to move more toward the findings that took place in the OLA program report, and I note that you have these reports in your packets. There is a lot of information there. I'm going to give you the 5,000-foot view for sake of time, but there a lot of work has been accomplished. In terms of our board of directors, there was an ask for meaningful, transparent oversight of the agency. We fully implemented the requirements of the Minnesota Open Meeting Law. Agendas include public comment. Our minutes are specific enough that the detail is there for folks to know exactly what happened. Our agendas and materials are posted within the guidelines, and our audio recordings of meetings are available on our website. We joined the Minnesota School Boards Association in July of 2017. Our full board went through phase one and two training, and that training will become a part of our onboarding process for any new board members in the future. We also accessed the MSBA policy service, and to date we've adopted and adapted 42 model policies to the PERPICH Center, 30 of which were mandatory for students in our state. We've also rewrote our student handbook using those same policies and updated our attendance policy, and we are effectively implementing that policy at our high school. Our board committees statutorily are required to meet at least 3 times per year. I will tell you that those folks have met multiple times per month since that February date, and they are doing a good job at that, and they are also taking minutes at each of their meetings. They also implemented a more transparent budgeting process last year, and so far this year we have adopted budget assumptions and a timeline for the upcoming budget process. Our employment vacancies are posted and filled per MMB rules and procedures, and our high-level positions, we've hired a finance director, a communications director, and 2 content specialists within the last 3 months. The board is updated regularly by the high school principal at every meeting on enrollment trends and at least annually on student achievement data. There was a concern about high school enrollment. Our first day enrollment this year was 161 students. There also is a requirement or ask that we be representative of our state. It's hard to determine exactly what is metro and what is outstate. For the sake of comparison, if you were to take the congressional districts 3, 4, and 5 and take those students, we have 100 students from those areas, and from the rest of the state, 61. All congressional districts are represented in our student body this year, the lowest being 8 students from congressional district 7, which is the far west part of the state. I would add that while our goal is to have it perhaps be 50-50, it perhaps is more reasonable to believe that it would represent where our kids are actually in our state, where they live. Last time I saw a number, I'll throw it out, it was about 70% of our students were in some type of metro area. So I think to have representation from across the state be equal, probably it will be difficult at best. The Crosswinds property, we served as managers since July 1st. And it was recently sold to the St. Paul Public Schools. Admin facilitated that process, and I believe they have the information to share with you on the details. Proud to say that our leadership at the agency, there was a request about MDE licensure. Obviously, I'm licensed as a superintendent and a principal, and our high school principal and assistant principal and dorm supervisor also have high school principal's licenses. And lastly, in terms of the program report, there was a request for MDE to have a representative on our board in ex officio position. Deputy Commissioner Charlene Briner joined our board in September. Of more importance, I believe, right now, is you want to hear about the outreach activities that the organization has been doing. So there was a finding that we were not complying with statutory requirements. So last year when the board did their budget, they set it up so that our current outreach programs were funded through the end of December. I was given the task of evaluating and determining what we should do with those programs moving forward from January on. And the three that were affected by this were our regional center program, the Turnaround Arts program, and the Perfect Art Integration Network for Teachers, or the PAINT program. Regional centers and turnaround arts programs are continuing throughout the entire year. We had made commitments to school districts and to their employees that we would sustain this work at the beginning of the year, and felt it was unfair to pull our support from them mid-year. We at our agency reduced some of our staff to make other program decisions, but we have continued to work with our partners there. The PAINT program was discontinued at the end of December, primarily because it did not fit the statutory needs language, in that it didn't serve arts teachers directly. It worked more with the course subject teachers having the ability and learning how to bring arts into their curriculum. Good program, but just not our role. Our arts library, some of you might remember from the discussions last year, was removed from the main building after some water damage approximately 3 years ago. It has been located in another building in an inadequate site in terms of size. Much of our collection on the professional side has been boxed, and part of our student collection has also been boxed. Our board and committees have made the decision that is coming back to our building. We had thought about bringing it back over Christmas vacation, but decided we didn't want to disrupt a art studio that had been put in that space. You know, if there's space open, someone will find a way to use it. And so we are going to go through that process of returning the library to our original site in summer, and it will be open for our students and arts teachers across the state to access. And by the way, our arts library is part of the regional and state system, so teachers can check out and use interlibrary loan to get things back and forth. So that's going to be up and running at that time. Our outreach program for teachers, I want to share with you the vision that we have. It's difficult to reach the entire state. We have a very large state, and we are looking at a way to make sure that we reach all parts of the state, as is our role. So the strategic plan that was adopted defines our role as meeting that need. And first of all, outreach has been without a music specialist for 3 years. That's the largest number of teachers we have in this state. I'm happy to say we hired that music specialist 2 weeks ago. And as of today, we have a fully staffed outreach program, and they are working with teachers out in the state as we speak. Very happy about that. We're also looking to create partnerships with the state service co-ops to help us reach all corners, much like the regional centers of excellence have done through the MDE. We know that they have facilities and the technology to help us reach areas when we can't send a person to Thief River Falls or to wherever. So we're working with the co-op executive directors. I've met with them twice, and I'm in the process of visiting each one of the co-ops before the end of the year to meet with the superintendents that are part of that group and sharing what Purpich can do for them in the future. We're very excited about the possibilities of using technology and the service co-ops to help us do our work. And lastly, statutory language asks us to have the Comprehensive Arts Planning Program, or the CAP program, in place. That has been not done for the last few years. We are going to budget and bring that program back to the schools, where we go out and help them make five-year plans for how arts work in their school district and community starting next fall. The second document I just want to point out to you is the director's report to the legislature from January 15th. It's the mandatory report that I need to give to you. And so give me just a second to find my notes, please. There we go. I won't go through all of this. Just know that we are aggressively recruiting students. We have an admissions coordinator that started last year. To date, since July 1st, actually since September 1st, she has been in over 60 counties. She visits our organizations. She visits our schools, counselors, etc., leaving documents that kids can pick up and parents can pick up about the Purpose Center. We are developing and using a marketing plan right now. We're using social media, and it is one of the most aggressive programs that we have in place right now, and we will get better at that moving forward. I would just have you also note in that same report our information and data from last year is available, our student achievement. I know there were concerns about math scores and math participation. Happy to tell you that both of those rose last year significantly. Our ACT scores did go up as well in the composite except for science. Our AP exams, we did 7 different exams at Purpich, and our scores went up, 3-plus scores went up about 7%. We're still lagging a little bit behind the state in that. Our graduation rate was 98%. And of the 86 graduates, 34 enrolled in Minnesota post-secondary institutions upon graduation, and 40 enrolled in other post-secondary institutions in the U.S., Canada, and abroad. So that is the 5,000-foot view. I'm sorry that I had to kind of skim over the top of that. I really do appreciate the opportunity to come and share with you what we've been able to accomplish in the last year, in the last 6 months. And I believe that Purpich is, like I said at the beginning, is on the path to return to its role as being a leader for the arts in the state, and I'm anxious to be a part of that moving forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Trigstad. And is your board chair wanting to offer any comments as well?
And let me just introduce myself again. I'm Ben Vanderco. I've been the board chair now for a little over a year, and I'm really happy to be here with Dr. Trigstad. He has just done enormous good for the school, bringing us up to where we should be, and I think that we're well poised for the future. Our biggest challenge, I will add, as he knows, is getting students in. So if you know of any students that really would like an intensive art-focused education, send them our way. We'd love to have them there. That's a great learning environment, and it's only going to get better. So that's all I have to say. I'm here to support him. We're glad to have him.
All right. Glad to have you, Mr. Vanderkoy.
Yeah, I would just like, Chair, I'd like to add to that that I agree that student and getting students there is our largest challenge right now. Having stepped into a couple roles in my past, in my career, that into some turbulence, it's difficult to turn around public perception in a short amount of time. We're going to need a little bit of time, frankly, to change the view and the understanding of what Purpich does. But in the meantime, my promise to you and to everyone else is that we are going to become the arts educator support network that we're supposed to be, and we can do that very quickly, and we will be doing it very quickly.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you. Last spring, when it was a turbulent time here at the legislature, we received many acts of faith from the alumni and the role that the alumni felt that Purpich played in their present lives because they had gone there. And so can you tell a little bit about how you've used that as a strength for building a program for tomorrow?
Certainly.
Dr. Trigstad.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, part of what our work with our communications director is to maintain those relationships with our stakeholders, and we do have some strategies in place that keep them involved with what's happening today. A new educational foundation has been formed around the arts in Minnesota with purposes perhaps more of a center on that. And we are looking to reestablish those good relationships with our alumni. We know that they, in many times, are our best spokespersons moving forward. So it is our intention to keep close touch with them and have their support, hopefully, moving forward.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And is this report, the OLA going over that? Or
Yeah, we have someone from the Legislative Auditor's Office here, Mr. Alter, who will
go. I think that maybe these gentlemen might be able to answer the questions.
So I would that is the report that I provided.
Okay, good. So on page 4, it's talking about the prior finding was partially resolved regarding it had witnesses in processes to collect, deposit, and accurately record student fees and performance receipts. Number 3 there is overdue student accounts from prior years were referred to the Department of Revenue for collection purposes in December of 2016. Do you get reports back on what's been collected?
Dr. Trigson.
Chair, Representative, I don't actually know that answer right off the top of my head. I can find that information out.
Great, that'd be great. And then, Madam Chair, just one last question.
Representative Scott.
Thank you. How long can a student go? The next bullet point talks about overdue students that are overdue. And how long do you let the student go overdue before they're asked to leave if they haven't been paying?
So only Dr. having Trigson. Been there 6 months, I'm sure, Representative, I don't know if I can specifically answer that, but if I was to be asked that question right now, I would say that there really is no amount of money that probably would force us to say leave, but we would go through other means. The education is the most important piece.
Representative Scott, all right. I think maybe it would be best to bring down the representative from the auditor's office to go over their report, and then we can resume questions of everyone. Thanks, gentlemen. And if you want to stay close, just in case we come back to you with questions. All right. Welcome, Mr. Alter.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Joel Alter with the Legislative Auditor's Office, and I was the manager of the evaluation report last year. I should also mention Sonia Johnson from our office is also here, who worked on our financial audit, which came out at the same time last year. And I will be very brief. You have in your packet a one-pager that we produced that gives you kind of a snapshot of some things that have improved and some areas still to work on. I will just say that the problems that we found a year ago were numerous and serious. We didn't think that the executive director and the board at that time, leading up to that period, had properly managed this agency. And we thought that the agency's decision to take on a second school to operate several years ago had really stretched the agency's resources too thin. And so there have been a lot of changes, as you've heard, and I know that you have documentation in front of you from the agency about that, and I think that's good. We felt there was a need to see a more active board and an executive director who had the trust of staff. In that one-page update, I'm just going to highlight a couple of things for you. And we agree that there have been a number of areas where there have been improvements in the operations of this agency. Two areas that we highlighted that are kind of continuing areas of continuing to work on, and Mr. Triggs had mentioned both of them. One is the area of the enrollment of the Arts High School. And as he mentioned, they had 161 students at the start of this year. By statute, the school is capped at an enrollment of 310. And it's not very long ago that the school was pretty close to that cap. The reason that we think the enrollment is important, and there are a variety of reasons, but an area that was a subject of discussion a lot last year after our report came out is that the cost of operating the Arts High School is significant. And when you have enrollment that is about half of what's allowed in law, the cost per student is significant. And so while it's true that arts education can cost more than other types of education because of the materials and supplies and the need to have performance spaces and things like that. Also, it's extremely important to try to maximize the number of students to get those costs per student in a reasonable range. And so we recognize that this agency was not going to, in a single year, turn around its enrollment. And they had done most of their recruiting for the current year already by the time our report had come out last year. So I would just urge certainly legislators and also the agency to keep their eyes on that one. I think that's an important one, because without larger enrollment, the school's cost per pupil will remain well above the cost of other schools. And then the second area I just wanted to briefly highlight is outreach, just because that is an ongoing area. I think that when we looked at the agency, I would characterize what they were doing in outreach as being very deep but not broad. And so there were a lot of parts of the state, a lot of school districts that weren't benefiting from some of the expertise that the agency had. And I know that a lot is in progress here, and you heard a description of it. And so I would certainly encourage the agency to continue pushing that. I think that, that there are a lot of schools that can benefit from the expertise at Purfitch, and I think the measure will be a year from now or whenever. Find out about some of those benefits that the school districts are experiencing, and find out what they're thinking about the assistance that they're getting. So, Madam Chair, I just wanted to highlight those things, and I open for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Alter. Appreciate you being here. Questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think my question, though, maybe is not for Mr. Alter, but for Ms. Adrians. Since this is a small agency, wouldn't we see their budget and line item expenditures? I know we have a static appropriation, but other agencies, we get to review that. And I know there's an audit done, but a financial audit done, but not annually, correct, Mr. Alter?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, I think we had previously done a financial audit 4 years previously. That's roughly the cycle of trying to get back to Purfitch. So we haven't done any audit work since we were there a year ago.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Adrians, remind us again what our biennial appropriation is.
Ms. Adrians.
Madam Chair and members, their typical annual appropriation is just under $7 million per year, so it's about $6.9 million. And you're right that in the tracking and the amount that we see, there's not a lot of detail. It's mostly just the appropriation for Purfitch. I can work with MMB and the agency, and we can get more detailed information, but we don't typically have that.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In light of what Mr. Alter was just talking about, and each student is about $20,000 or plus with that kind of appropriation per year, I think, we probably should call for some kind of budget report so that we know how the dollars are being spent. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that suggestion, Representative Erickson. Other questions, comments? I had a question maybe for you, Dr. Trigstad. I know, obviously, you were given kind of a lot to work on, and I'm sure part of it was determining what to tackle first. And I have no doubt that perhaps the precarious nature of Purfitch's future may have dampened enrollment. But I also know that there's charter schools focusing on performing arts for high schools have gone up. There's one that actually relocated Eden Prairie, and they are attracting lots of students from all over the metro. How do you think that's impacting students who may go to Purfitch now that other options are available to them if they want an arts high school education?
Madam Chair, I do believe that it is affecting attendance at Purfitch as well as other area schools. We are in a period of choice, and I think the thing that is very different about Purfitch, number one, is the fact that it's juniors and seniors only. The fact that it is you're admitted to Purfitch charter schools if you show up, you enroll and you're in. And so each, I think, has to find their niche, and I think we are going to look forward in finding ways that we serve that particular student need into the future. But to say that there's no effect would be incorrect. So, yes.
All right, thank you. And just as a quick follow-up, I know obviously the process is different because you have to be admitted, and there's a process of that, of submitting materials. And do you do personal interviews with students as well?
Yes, we have two different dates where students, there's an initial date for papers to be in, and then there's a secondary date that's coming up in on March 19th. And students that apply then come in for a Saturday interview. It's much like a jury or interview process where we have at least three adults and one that is not a that's from the community that works and talks with the student. They bring in the portfolio. You find out what their drive and their needs are moving forward. And to date, approximately a 75% admittance rate. So we do have very high standards, both academically and artistically.
All right. Thank you. You answered my third question on the acceptance rate. So thank you. Other questions? Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Dr. Dreadstead, then, if March 19 is a deadline, how are we doing with applications this year compared to last year?
Dr. Dreadstead.
My understanding, and I haven't looked at exact numbers, to be honest with you, that our initial application period had less applications, not a lot, but at less than last year. And we have redoubled our efforts since February 1st, which was the initial date, and we're hoping to see those numbers go up in March.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. We have someone here from the Department of Administration to talk about crosswinds, and so we appreciate you very much taking time to be here. Thank you for the reports.
Thank you.
All right, and I think we have Assistant Commissioner here with us today.
Correct. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Alice Roberts-Davis. I'm an Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Administration, responsible for property and procurement.
All right, thank you so much for being here. And I know we had asked you to kind of give us a what has happened with the Crosswinds property. We know it has been sold to St. Paul Public Schools. So can you just kind of give us a little snapshot of that process and where we're at?
Certainly. The disposition process for property is outlined in Minnesota Statutes, Chapter 16B, 281 through 296. I'd like to step you through that process really quickly. Once an agency has determined that they have a surplus piece of property, they then declare it a surplus to the Commissioner of Administration, which is what happened in this situation. Written notice of the availability of that surplus land is then sent to all state departments and agencies. The agencies throughout the state, including Minnesota State and also the University of Minnesota, all then have a two-week period with which they can respond and express an interest in the property. If within that two-week period no one expresses an interest, then we have step two, which is offering it to local governmental units, school districts, etc. They then have 4 weeks in order to express an interest in the property, and if no interest is expressed within that time frame, then we move to phase three, which is sale of the property to the public. In this instance, on August 7th, the Department of Administration provided notice to the state departments and agency heads, Minnesota State and the University of Minnesota, letting them know that the property was available. Responses were due on September 5th, and Minnesota State Academies was the only state agency that expressed an interest in the property, but then they withdrew their interest on November 28th of last year. So we moved into step two. On December 4th, we provided notice to the cities, counties, and school districts surrounding the Crosswinds School and let them know that the property was available for a sum of $15.3 million. Those responses were due on December 18th, and within that time period, we had one eligible responder, which was St. Paul Public Schools. We signed a purchase agreement, and the funds for the school were transferred on February 21st, which completed the sale of the property. The work associated with the disposition of the property was allocated an appropriation of $162,000 by the legislature last year. For the sale of the property, the Department of Administration has spent just over $20,000 for the appraisal, the title commitment, and then also the time of our real estate staff for the transaction that took place. So there's a $141,000 balance that was appropriated to the department, which will be returned to the Purpich Center for Arts Education and should be canceled at the end of this fiscal year.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much for that rundown. Just a quick question. I'm assuming the $15.3 million was the appraised value of the property?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Any questions for Ms. Roberts-Davis? That. Just final question. I'm assuming since everything is done, all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed and the transaction is completed. So there's no more work to be done on that.
That's correct. We have transferred the property fully to St. Paul Public Schools, and I have been reading lots of newspaper articles about the plans that they have in place for what they'll do with the building next, so we're very happy for them.
All right. Thank you. Representative Jurgens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have quick question. Is it, I'm not sure who can answer it, is it unusual to have a school building reside in one school district but actually be the property of another school district?
I'll turn to nonpartisan, but I'll first comment on that. You know, we had four schools, and this Crosslands was the fourth, that were started with West Metro and East Metro integration districts, and schools were started, and sort of gradually they decided they didn't want to operate the schools, and so they have been turned over. And I think in all cases except for this one, they went to the school district that they were located in that wanted them. In this particular case, I'm assuming South Washington did not offer a bid or did not entertain a bid. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Jurgens, and did nonpartisan have anything to add to that? Because I don't know if outside of those instances how many times we transfer buildings.
Madam Chair, Representative Jurgens, I'm not aware of a transfer of buildings before, but I believe there have been a couple of instances where a school district has owned a building outside of the borders of that individual district. Very, very unusual. 2,000 school buildings or thereabouts, and I've only heard of a few where the facility is located outside of the district boundaries.
Madam Chair, so nothing in statute preventing it. It's unusual but not unheard of.
Madam Chair, Representative Jurgens, yes, to my knowledge, there's no prohibition at all on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Doherty, did you want to comment?
Madam Chair, thank you. Mary Doherty Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools. I do want to just briefly add that the Crosswinds building, the majority of students that always have attended that school throughout of its history have always been St. Paul students, though. So we've always made up a majority of the population.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Roberts-Davis? All right. Thank you very much for being here. Appreciate the update.
Thank you.
With that, we've completed our agenda for today, so everyone have a good weekend.